Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Grace Snell on how AI is redefining education.
The students are more savvy with this technology than the teachers, and so they're better at circumventing some of the guidelines and getting around maybe some of the rules or ethical controls the teachers are trying to put on it.
Grace Snell, next. It's been nearly 3 years since the AI chatbot known as ChatGPT came on the scene. Its impact on education was quickly noticed. World Magazine reports one-third of college-aged Americans now use ChatGPT. One of the challenges, of course, is whether to use it just for research purposes or to actually have it do the writing of a paper. Many other questions are raised, and world writer Grace Snell addresses them in her piece, ChatGPT, AI is forcing teachers and students to redefine education. Spencer Dahlke is with Grace Snell.
Well, first question I wanted to put to you is, what prompted the writing of the article?
Well, actually, it was my editor who came up with the idea, so I have to give her credit for that. But kind of looking around and saying, wow, this AI thing is a big deal. Everybody's talking about it. It seems kind of ubiquitous, but it's also hard to pin down. Like, what is this? It's kind of this scary robot. Are robots taking over the world? And just thinking, hey, how do we engage this with discernment from a Christian worldview and really get precise about what we're talking about here and what some of the implications might be?
How did you start thinking about AI in the classroom? Because there's like a lot of applications for AI and it's used in so many places.
Yeah, one of the reasons was that ChatGPT came on the scene in November 2022. And so we're just coming up on the first round of college students if they're graduating a little bit early. And like educators who have spent their entire college experience with ChatGPT available and kind of as a widespread tool. And so that sparked some interest in like, hey, I wonder how teachers are dealing with this. And also just hearing from, you know, friends who are teachers or parents with young children, that this is just everywhere and nobody knows what to do with it, and kind of thinking, especially with education, like it touches on a lot of questions of like, what does it mean to be human, to pass on knowledge and learning? And so it's sort of the training ground and the trial space where people are testing out what are the implications of this technology. And so it seemed like an interesting place to look at this issue.
What are some of the common ways that AI is being worked into specifically the classroom?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways, and there's some legitimate ways, and then ways that students are just taking it and running with it. And still, we're kind of getting our finger on like some of the data that's available. OpenAI did a survey looking at, okay, how are students self-reporting their uses of this? And a lot of times, students are using it for brainstorming, for getting started, for creating outlines. But at least 30% of students self-reported that they use it also for drafting essays and things like that, or for exam answers. And so there's kind of this tension here of some people are using it really wisely, and then sometimes people get tired and they just turn to it and say, just do this for me. You could do it better anyway. Let me just put it into ChatGPT and have it do the work.
What sort of like real world examples do you see like Christian educators like facing this problem? Like, what do they do to like address it?
We ran a second essay along, like in a package with our magazine issue. And it was from a teacher who was dealing with these things in the classroom a lot, having students that were struggling. Sometimes English was a second language for them. And she would see this drastic turning point where they were really struggling, but they were willing to work. And then they would turn in an assignment that was basically perfect. But when she asked them about it one-on-one, they would say they didn't understand, or they couldn't give her a reasoning behind how they got to this perfect, whatever it was, a slideshow or a poster board, like how they got there. And so she had to say like, hey, are you using ChatGPT? And, you know, that was usually an issue there. Like that was what was going on. And so a lot of times that's what's happening. And it's hard to pin down. It's hard to track. It's hard to, you know, because sometimes the students are more savvy with this technology than the teachers. And so they're better at circumventing some of the guidelines and getting around maybe some of the rules or ethical controls that teachers are trying to put on it.
I have heard the common objection to like using AI in the classroom, as I think you reported on too in your article, is that it might foster a spirit of intellectual laziness, which I wouldn't mind talking about a little bit. But AI and technology in the classroom is like hardly a new topic per se. How do you think industrial America and the rapid progression of technology, shall we say, has impacted the classroom and our country's pedagogy over the last however many years?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think industrialization has kind of created this sense that we're almost mass producing workers to contribute to our economy. And like, let's just rush them through. Let's get them their diploma. Let's send them on their way. Let's kind of move them into the workforce, almost seeing people as these like interchangeable units of like, one is as good as the other. They have exactly the same number of credit hours, exactly the same strengths, exactly the same reading level and math proficiency. But that's not how people are. Like, the Lord has created us each uniquely, and people have different strengths and different deficiencies. And so there's a lot that's lost in kind of seeing it almost like as this mass production factory system of learning. And I think AI really is kind of breaking down and showing the cracks in some of that idea, because now we're getting that. Because if we're just embracing this sort of mass production, well, AI can do it faster and it can do it better than students. So if that is your framework, why would you teach a child anything? Why would you teach an adult anything for that matter if in the fraction of a second, this chatbot can just spit out an answer that is better than what this human being could do if they sat for hours and hours? So it kind of raises the question of, you know, what is the purpose of learning? Like, it has to be more. If you're going to make an argument for the value of education, it has to be more than just utility. It has to be more than just efficiency. And that's where I think the Christian worldview has a lot to say about, hey, no, this is whole person transformation. And for believers, this is spiritual transformation. This is becoming like Christ, as one of my sources that I interviewed pointed out.
It also seems like it would have like some impact, not just on education, but also on work. Like you mentioned, like, human beings are not really meant to be cogs in a wheel. I guess to that end, what do you think AI means for our work? What do you think work's going to look like?
Yeah, absolutely. In some ways, that's kind of the million-dollar question, right? But it's interesting, you know, there will be these surveys, like Microsoft and LinkedIn did a survey together that showed, you know, 75% of employers said they would rather hire a less qualified candidate who understood how to work with AI than someone who was more qualified and didn't understand it. So a lot of times people who are really excited about this technology will say, you don't want your kid to get left behind, or you don't want your student to get left behind. But one of the professors I spoke with, Brad East, was kind of making the point, hey, this stuff is supposed to be intuitive, especially with things like ChatGPT. It's an intuitive interface. My kids could learn how to do this. What's more important and harder to teach, and then employers arguably want more, is the ability to interact with people, communication skills, like to be on a team, those sorts of soft skills that are harder to teach and takes that productive struggle. But if you have critical thinking skills, you can learn how to use AI as it is necessary for your job. And like, you can hone those specific applications of it. But if you only know AI and you don't have critical thinking skills or interpersonal communication skills, that's so much harder to teach.
Are educators kind of beginning to like reframe their thinking to see education more as a forming of the person rather than, you know, churning out of workers?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I think for a lot of educators, they're just kind of in this crisis mode right now where they're putting out fires. They're trying to address this problem. It's like whack-a-mole. It keeps popping up. And they're already, a lot of times, schools are overstressed. You know, there's not a lot of teachers. There's not a lot of money. They're putting out fires as they come. But I think a lot of teachers recognize something needs to give. Something needs to change. It's just figuring out how to meet the demands of such a widespread problem. One research think tank called Cardis did a study just of Christian K through 12 schools and asked educators, like, what do you think about this? And a lot of them reported kind of middle of the road familiarity with it, middle of the road, like, confidence and comfortability with it. But when she asked them, like, hey, what do you think is going to be the biggest area of impact for AI on teachers, they all said, far and away, 80% said it's going to be teaching and learning, tests, homework. Like, that's where we're going to see this come into play the most, of figuring out how to evaluate student learning outcomes, how to push them to be creative on their own. She made the point, teachers have this sense that this is really big, but they don't quite know what to do with it. And a lot of times they don't feel like they have the time to be thoughtful about it because they're just so busy trying to meet the needs of the students right in front of them. They're in the struggle.
As someone who's done some reporting on like what AI looks like in the classroom and what education might become, how do you think teachers could slow down to actually do some thinking about how to implement AI, if at all, into their classrooms.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the professors I interviewed and mentioned earlier, Brad East, had some thoughts that I thought were really helpful about this. And he just said one thing teachers can do is recognize that they have the authority to do what they see fit with their classes. And a lot of times there's this external pressure that, oh, you have to stay with progress. If you don't teach your students how to use AI, they're going to fall behind. And that might be true in certain really specialized fields. He's a theology professor, and he's like, no, that's not what we're doing in my class. I don't have to do that. I'm the teacher. It's not going to ruin their lives if I make them turn their phones off and put their phones away, if I make them take notes on paper, if I allow them to come into this screen-free zone and just sit and think. I set those boundaries and parameters. And a lot of times what he found was that in student feedback at the end of a semester, they weren't hating him for it on his like course evaluations. They were like, actually, it was refreshing to slow down. Actually, I felt like I could focus for longer. I really struggled to focus in my other classes. So I think even just for teachers to recognize, like, you don't have to do it that way. There are other ways to do it and to arrange your class, even just for like, and if you only have them for a 90-minute period, there are boundaries that you can put in place to help foster learning and kind of push back on some of these trends.
Given where we are now, I'm wondering if you could like cast a vision too for where do you think AI will take us in the next 5 to 10 years?
I mean, I think this is a massive turning point. We're only a couple years down the road from what's been just like an incredible, groundbreaking, like revolution that's starting to touch everything. Like you see stories of AI in science, AI in education, AI in sports, AI in everything. So it is a really big deal. And it's a big industry as well. People are projecting that this is going to be billions and billions of dollars, I think $92 billion, of an industry that people can invest in. So there's a lot of money here. There's a lot of incentives to experiment with everything. And so I think that pressure that I talked about on teachers is only going to grow. And it's going to become more important for thoughtful believers to take a stand and say, okay, let's slow this down. Just because we can doesn't mean we should. How can we wisely use this? And where do we not want to use it at all? And where, especially when it comes to children, they don't often have the tools yet to wield a tool like this wisely. Like they're still building their cognitive abilities, their ability to speak, to write, to reason, to do simple math. And so they're not equipped to wield something with this much power. And that doesn't mean that it's not a tool that can be used for good. There's a lot of potential positive applications, but just being really discerning about how and when to allow that into classroom spaces.
I guess going back to a little bit ago, you talked about like education is being reshaped to focus more on shaping the whole person. What does that look like?
I think in some ways it looks like moving kids away from a really screen-saturated learning environment to rediscovering kind of the wonder of the senses that the Lord has given us, of like taste and touch and sound, of music, of being outside, of, you know, looking at stars and looking through microscopes. That's what another source I talked to said, like, kids have this wonder and curiosity about the world. And those are things that we can really reclaim to make their learning experience rich instead of just putting them in front of a tablet because it's easier, or assuming that because this computer costs a lot of money, it will improve someone's education, but really helping kids reclaim that sense of joy and wonder in the natural world, instead of pushing them to spend more and more of their life online in this sort of virtual reality.
I can't help but wonder also, and I don't know if maybe you could speak to this, whether or not homeschooling might become sort of, if education is less about specialized knowledge and more about forming a child to be curious, that's not really something that one would need specialized teachers to do necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. I was homeschooled. I loved it. I think it's a great option for this. I don't think it's the only way, but I think it can be a really great way to foster that kind of like just curiosity, creativity in your kid. And not everyone can afford to do that. It's definitely a blessing. But if that's something that you have the desire to do and the means to do, I definitely think it's a great space because you do have that autonomy there. And it's going from, you're not just having the autonomy as a teacher, but as a parent too, to say, hey, I really know my kid and I know what's good for them. And we can lean into what they're really curious about and where they're really gifted, their passion for music or for science. And we can really strengthen that instead of just kind of pushing them to be a cog in the wheel, like you were talking about with that education system.
Have you ever read any Wendell Berry at all?
Yes, I love Wendell Berry. He was a big part of my college experience.
I must agree. I really like Wendell Berry. Refreshing for our listeners, I guess. He was a big writer in the late 20th century, big into farming, connecting to the land, skeptical of technologies that were coming about the computer at that time. Do you think he's right that humans should be skeptical of technology if it's encroaching on our connection to creation and what we might call real life?
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating question. Lynn Swainer, who I interviewed at CARDIS, kind of made this point that we are made in God's image and AI is made in our image. And to some extent, that's true of all technology. There is this element of God has made us creative, and so we create these things. And so I think I would argue it's not inherently good or evil one way or the other, but it has great capacity for good and evil, just like we do, because it's created in our image. And so people have always are uncomfortable with change. It's disruptive. We see that a lot, even in just thinking about economics and creative destruction, creative disruption. But that's not easy for anyone. Makes me think of, I think it was Plato was writing a dialogue in which Socrates is a character, and he's just bemoaning the advent of writing. He's like, what's going to become of kids these days? They don't remember anything. Their brains are mushy and soft. They write it all down, and we're losing this oral tradition. So I do think it's helpful to keep things in context that, it's always hard to adapt to these new technologies, but sometimes they're revolutionary and they spark great transformation. I think of the printing press and the Reformation, those two things went hand in hand. And so you never know what the Lord is doing and how he can use those technologies, but you also want to be wise. And I think especially with virtual technology, there's this other element of it's almost luring you into a fake world, an online world, at the risk of losing touch with real people right in front of you and real places and sources of purpose and meaning, real work, working with your hands, and just kind of getting, especially with ChatGPT, you're getting a conglomeration of other people's learning instead of encountering their works themselves. ChatGPT is going to draw from all of these different sources and just kind of water it down and give you the answer without any of those creative distinctives. It'll take Wendell Berry's ideas and give you the three sentence summary of his ideas, but you don't encounter his soul and his creativity through his writing in that same way. And there's a lot that's lost there.
Well, in one of his essays, he wrote about why he's not going to buy a computer. He talks about you lose, something to what you were saying, how, if you turn to AI, you kind of lose something about the creative process, I guess. You did some reporting on what makes AI different than humanity, shall we say. So what is it that is unique, do you think, about the human experience that AI can't really simulate?
One of the points that, again, I'm quoting Brad East a lot because I really appreciated his ideas. One thing that he was saying is, it can't answer ought questions, can't answer moral questions. It could give you one answer, but if you phrase the question a different way, it'll give you a different answer. Or if you train AI on a specific type of literature, it'll give you an answer with one sort of flavor. It's just regurgitating what it's been given. It can't speak to any sort of transcendent reality. And so you'll hear all these different stories where it'll be like, wait, I think my ChatGPT is, I think it's Catholic, or I think it's this. Just depending on what resources it's pulling from, it'll say, oh, yes, you should do, you should pray the Hail Mary this many times a day. And then you ask it about Islam and it'll say, oh, yes, this is what's going on. And it's just spitting out what it's taken in. It's only as good as those inputs. It's not doing any higher level thinking. And so I think that's one of the biggest ones, is this capacity for a connection with God to struggle with moral questions. That's just not what this tool is. It's not what it does. It just distills a massive amount of information into really simple prose. And somebody described it, it's basically a complex autocorrect, autocomplete, guessing statistically what the next word that would make sense there is. It's just looking at a pattern and then giving you the what it thinks is likely to be the best output there.
The way God operates is never, or at least rarely, the most efficient way. Jesus does not just download instruction to his disciples, but he actually sits, spends years with them and teaches them. which kind of flies right in the face of industrial America and these technologies that make our lives easier and faster. So how do you think Christians can educate their children, balancing the technologies that we have given that you mentioned can be very useful, while also taking things slow and really spending time with God, and maybe to by extension, really spending time enjoying what they're learning?
Reclaiming a sense of teleology and what is like the end that we're striving towards, and orienting your life towards those ends and not getting hung up on what technology specifically. I interviewed a guy, Josh Brake, and he made the point, everything is technology. A pencil is technology. You know, we're speaking via Zoom. That's technology. Paper is technology. Writing is technology. Human created tools and things, that's technology. And so I think it's less about, is this technology good or evil? And more like, am I honoring and serving the Lord? Am I glorifying Him? And am I using the gifts He's given me to the best of my ability? And are these tools furthering that, or are they hindering that? And that is hard because it takes a lot of discernment. It's not a hard and fast rule, but it's like, okay, is my use of AI helping me to glorify God and serve others better? Okay, great. Is it fostering deceitfulness and laziness in me? Is it hindering my creativity? Am I diminishing that because I don't think it's as good as what chatbot has produced? Am I, you know, kind of burying my talent, so to speak, like referencing a parable of Jesus? Like, am I using what He's given me well? And it, does this tool help me do that better? Okay, great. If not, then cut off the hand, get rid of it, and like seek to serve the Lord to the best of your ability.
How do we measure that? The heart is deceitful. What we might think is, oh yeah, this is helping me make my work a little easier, might come from a spirit of laziness. Wisdom, you talked about. Do you have any experiences that may be instructive or insightful or helpful for our listeners to help evaluate whether or not they are using technologies, in this case, I guess AI, to, you know, be lazy versus actually helping them with their telos, their end?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because even in that question, the idea of metrics kind of sounds a lot like that industrial framework we talked about of like, oh, how can I, you know, get the outcome here and make sure I'm measuring up and producing the right thing? And I think scripture talks a lot more in terms of fruit. And that is like the long process of like over time, am I producing good fruit of, you know, diligence in my work? Am I producing good work? Am I honest and upfront with my editors and my bosses of how I'm using this technology? So I think transparency is one way to gauge that. Am I willing to tell people how I'm using this? Okay, then I can have a conversation with them about whether that fits the needs of our company or of my job or of, you know, this classroom. But if I am concealing it, if I'm not willing, that's one pretty clear indicator that how I'm using it is not appropriate. So that's one way to look at it. Yeah, but I also think accountability and bringing this into the light with other people, just like being in community and asking people, hey, do you think that I have a problem with how I'm doing this? Hey, do you think I'm on my phone too much? Do you think that I'm, you know, outsourcing all of my ideas to ChatGPT? Or do you think that the way that I'm using this is beneficial and helpful to other people? And I think that's a great way to get a read on that.
Looking outward then, since we've been talking about like what it means to be human and pursue work well and pursue education well, how can Christians capitalize on this age of AI to promote biblical anthropology and human flourishing to the world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is a prime moment for the gospel because I think there's nothing so striking and arresting as seeing someone living very differently and seeing someone live a beautiful life very differently. And it looks very different if you're willing to slow down, if you're willing to unplug, to disengage, to be authentically creative, because that takes some vulnerability as well. A lot of times people just, I've noticed even just peers, people that I know who will say, well, ChatGPT gave me this idea for a game we could play or a recipe we could make, because then you can't make them feel bad if you don't like the answer. You can't hurt their feelings because it's, oh, ChatGPT came up with this. It's not, well, I thought we could play this group game and everybody hates it, so now I'm embarrassed, you know. But that boldness to be creative of, hey, I had this idea and maybe it's not perfect, but, you know, maybe it's a great idea. And so, yeah, I think that that is really different when you see people who are stepping back from the tyranny of technology, so to speak, and saying, no, I don't have to do that. I can rest on a Sunday. I don't need to do that. I don't have 9 hours of screen time. I'm going to power my phone off. I don't need to be on call or accessible at all times and all hours. And I think that that's a really great conversation starter with people because it is so different. They're like, oh, how come you don't do whatever you do? And you can say, well, it's because I love the Lord. It's because I want to live this certain way. So I really think it's a great conversation opener.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, Grace Snell, writer for World Magazine. You can read her piece, ChatGPT, AI is forcing teachers and students to define education, by going to WNG.org. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Dr. Sandra Dalton Smith on finding emotional rest through the framework of beholding, becoming, and belonging.
We may not look like everything else in the room. We may not talk like it or bring the same concepts. But what happens is when we enter that space, we complete the God picture. We bring a portion of heaven that is missing in that spot. And it's unique in that it's framed by our life experiences, our personal relationship with the Father and Jesus and Holy Spirit. It's a unique spot where we belong. But it may not look like we fit in.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.